Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim Jarvis here, and along with me I have my co-host Han. Han, are you there?
Good evening, everyone. Good evening, Jim. This should be an interesting show this evening.
Yes, it will. Well, today's show is titled, Do You Know a Guy? This is Straight Talk, episode number 9, and it's going to go over the aspects of who and how is the best way to select the construction team member. If you go back to our previous episodes, specifically the team building one, we talk about at length the need for the right kind of team member, and the construction entity is probably one of the most important. Obviously, they are high in the core level team member category because they take a very important role. That role is really managing the construction and all aspects of creating what Han and I design, what comes up in our heads, what comes up in your heads as the client, as to what you'd like it to look like. And they're the folks that implement that. We've had over the years so many horror stories that some of which we may share with you tonight. It's not all bad, though. There are a lot of really, really, really good construction members out there that actually really do know what they're doing and are extremely professional, and will help best to be able to find a way to select that person and get them on the team and on the team early. So here's the question I'm going to throw at you, Han. We've heard it before. My neighbor's friend's brother is a contractor. Can he be the fella that does the construction of my new project? How many times have we heard that before when we have a sit-down with our client for the first time?
Well, I think if we could pay a nickel for every time that we heard that, we should be pretty well off. We hear it all the time.
Yeah, we do.
Okay, I mean, the simple answer is maybe, but usually not. Mainly, if you, unless they are a commercial construction company that had had some experience in the dental industry, doing a company or doing dental offices, more likely it will be a very arduous, very costly, and very regretful experience. So,
well,
my answer is no.
Yeah. Well, most likely no, but that particular person, whoever the neighbor's friend's brother is a contractor, has one thing of the many things that are necessary, and that has he has the basically the interrelationship or the ability to connect with and communicate with, because he's already associated with. He's not a stranger. He does have some connection to at least the team, cursory, not primary, but cursory. And we'll go through that. So to start out tonight's discussion, I think we need best to talk about the real quickly the two methods of construction that we recommend at HJT. And there's more than two, but the two that we really recommend are, and there's really one that we like to recommend, but there are two out there. The first one is a general contractor, and also known as a traditional construction method. We've talked a little bit about that in some of our previous episodes, but the general contractor is the old school, old standby. Here's the set of drawings. Everything's been designed. Here are all the plans. Take these plans and general contractor, give me a lump sum cost as to how much it will be to build this project at this particular time and this particular location. And you send that out to two or three or four contractors. They all come back with their bids, and that you then evaluate those bids based upon the criteria that we establish and make a selection. That's the first method. The second method is what's considered construction management. And we consider that a more contemporary method because it's been around for a while, but it's relatively new, probably in the last 20 years. And that particular method involves a construction manager who leads the project, and then that person or that organization will then bid out every component of the construction. So a building, a new project, or and these issues relate to either a new build, a remodel, anything that it has to do with construction. So let's say in a new build, you're going to have things like drywall. You're going to have things like carpentry work. You're going to have concrete work. You're going to have electrical. You're going to have the plumbing. You're going to have mechanical work. You're going to have roofing. You have all of these trades that have to be on the job. That construction manager will bid out each one of those items of work and then take those bids, show them to the team that includes us and you as the owner. A determination is made based upon their recommendation and who is going to be part of the construction organization. And then that's the group that actually builds it. Now, this construction manager, you may say, well, this person has a lot of power. It could be a woman, of course, not just a guy. They have a lot of power on who they're going to select or not select. Well, in reality, they don't always make the selection. It's actually the team member that should make the selection with input to the construction manager, because not always, and we've heard this so many times before, haven't we, Han? Cheapest is not always best.
Yes, yeah, usually that's the case.
Yeah, it is, and it's actually kind of crazy when you think about it. We've got some horror stories. I'm going to let Han describe a couple that we've gone through where, you know, you set out a project to bid and they go through all the project costs and come back with so many different costs, and maybe two or three or four costs are right around the same number. Then you get one person that's 40% lower. And you think to yourself, well, what did they forget? Or
40% higher.
Or 40% higher. And then you say, well, this guy's just too busy. Or this person is just way too busy. And they don't want the work. Nowadays, things are a little different because so many people are so busy. The construction world is going gangbusters. Costs are going up. Availability is going down. Availability of good contractors and construction trade contractors is going down because everybody is building and everybody is doing something. And by doing that, costs end up going up, and then also time durations get longer because it takes longer to get things built. But in general, that's the two methods that are out there. Each one have a very specific set of criterias, and there's a more in-depth discussion that you can get from our construction guideline book feel free to go to our website, www.hjtdesign.com, and download it for free. And there's a real thorough 19-item comparison between construction manager and general contractor, and some of the things that you at least be able to help to understand what the two do. But tonight's show, we really want to talk about the two methods, but mostly how to pick one and what's the best methodology in creation of a system that allows you to pick the right contractor, be it a general contractor or a project manager. So we'll use the word contractor in a combined form in today's show. One of the things that I've always looked for, and I know Han does it well, is you really need somebody who has dental experience. How crucial is that, Han?
Pretty critical, actually. I mean, if you have a contractor who has dental experience versus a contractor who just simply have commercial building experience, the big difference is the coordinations and knowledge that's involved with the dental systems, you know, the equipment, its placement, its installations. One area in particular that have become so critical is the med gas. Okay, it's I'm not just the contractor, but their subs as well, because there's certain requirement in licensing and training and certification that would separate them from the non-dental versus the dental.
I mean, let's tell it straight. It's a nightmare. If you get the wrong person,
yes, it is.
In that particular area, a plumber that is not certified, it literally is a nightmare. But go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, this is one of those things where you can have a contractor who have dental experience. You would have to ask more in-depth questions, specifically what is your experience in dental offices. We had encountered GC that actually have had dental experience, but have never installed a med gas system because all their projects involve in portable units. So it's a learning curve for them. It become a nightmare for the team. So again, we say this on our program, is that the only dumb questions, the ones you don't ask, that we mean that. You have to ask. It's almost like interrogating them.
Don't assume. But don't assume anything when it comes to
the
questions.
Yeah, George Vail say that well on is that assume nothing.
Exactly.
Yeah, assume nothing.
Well, obviously, the experience level, and you could have varying degrees of experience level when it comes to the dental construction world. Maybe the contractor has lots of experience doing build-outs within a retail center. They're real familiar with what it takes to be able to go in and do the interior pieces and parts. And maybe or maybe not, they have med gas experience. But, you know, maybe they're not the right selection when it comes to doing a new facility, for example, because they don't have that experience level, or vice versa. They have major experience level on new builds, but have never touched a med gas project. So it is crucial.
It is crucial. And, you know, you just have to, you know, dig deep and find out what exactly, what area they have experience in. I think it's great to have team member that actually can think with you or with the rest of the team, rather than be spoon-fed. You know, whether they, even if they have dental experience, and they are the type that that have to have everything spelled out for them, and they can't deviate, or if there's anything to deviate, they become very frustrated and or literally useless, then the project would be in trouble. So we typically look for people that can think with the team because, you know, there's a lot of unforeseen things that could happen on the project, and you want people that can help solve problems rather than be handheld and, you know, and have somebody else think for them.
Well, that's a key point you just brought out, problem solver. You know, is this individual a problem solver or a problem creator? There is two, and they both exist. They're one or the other. They're either going to help solve the problems or they're going to help create the problems. But there's no neutral spot there. So that's one of the criteria that you'd like to have written down when you do the interviews. But one of the things that we like to always ask is references. Have the potential contractors provide references. That's names and numbers of the people that they've done projects for before. Have the ability to call those people with a list of questions. That list of questions will help you put together so that it can be done either tandemly with us along with you, or you could do it separately. But you need to have references, get those references, and call them. You need to do the homework needs to be done. And it is crucial, since you're hiring them, we don't hire them as the designer or the architect. That's not our role. Our role is not to hire the contractor. Our role is to create the design and create the documents. Your role as the owner is to hire that individual along with our recommendations. We'll gladly give our recommendations. We do it all the time. Based upon all the facts, we'll make recommendations. Thankfully, a lot of time our recommendations are taken. Sometimes they're not. Most of the time when they're not taken, it ends up bad. We've had that happen, haven't we, Han?
Yes. I think it's part. You can't go into this process with your emotion intact. Everything has to be looked at as a business. You know, for instance, let's say your father is a contractor, and you want your father to do the project, but he doesn't have the experience. We would recommend against him, because again, our job and our main objective is to make sure that the project is pulled off successfully, that construction budget is being managed, the schedule is being managed. If the father happened to be a house builder, he wouldn't be the guy. We would totally recommend against it, because it's a business decision, and for us, it would be a bad business decision to recommend somebody who's not qualified. So it's a pretty thorough process, and with lots of consideration. And the other factor is price. Like Jim said, we normally don't recommend the low bidder, because you're looking for the ideal, the candidate that can deliver the project successfully on time, on budget, with the knowledge base that will that could work with the rest of the team, not somebody that are the low bidder that you have to train that going to cut teeth on your project.
Well, low bidder also means are they desperate for work? That you can make that I don't want to use the word assumption, but you can make that identification that if they're 40% lower than the mix of everyone else, then you have to question that, okay, either they forgot something or they, in fact, are really desperate for the work. And then that brings into question, are they really good enough to be, they should be busy. If everybody in the area is busy and they're not, you need to find out why. So you got to drill down and get to and investigate the facts. Why is this the case? We've had so many scenarios before where the low bidder basically tries to get the project, get you on the hook, as they say. The phrase is, once you've signed on the bottom line, they pretty much got you. And it's very expensive and very painful to terminate a construction contract and then try to pick up a construction project in the middle with somebody else. It's just, well, there's horror stories built around it. We've gone through a few.
It's
we've
very
seen
messy.
A few happen, and it's very,
yeah,
very messy. And costly.
Yeah,
there's three costs that are involved. There's the initial cost of what you've lost in the initial contract and what you potentially are going to get and for what, you know, what you've received for money you put out. Hopefully they're close to equal. More than likely they're not. Then there's the cost of, okay, now you've got to find somebody new. That there's a cost involved in doing that, and that new person more than likely is going to be more expensive than the original one. And because you can't go back to the other bidders, for example, who bid the project originally and say, will you hold that price? No, they're not going to do that. That price is only good for, you know, maybe 30 days at most. And then you have the cost of lost time. We all know that a good operatory should make you $25,000 to $30,000 a month. If you've got a 10 operatory practice, that's a chunk of change. And if you lose a month in your project because of delays, what did that just cost you? That just cost the business, your business, an unbelievable amount of money. And it happens that quickly. So it's what we're talking about is serious stuff. It's crucial. You must investigate the facts and get down to the particulars before you make a decision. Most important in my mind, in all of these criteria we talk about other than experience, is communication. Can you communicate? Can the team communicate? Can the contractor communicate with the team? If there's a hiccup or the inability to do that, or an unwillingness, we've had that happen. If there's an unwillingness to communicate, i.e., no, I don't deal with the architect, I deal directly with the owner, that's who I signed my contract. And it's like, really? Wait a minute, don't you understand the role of the team? The team is, the owner has hired an architect to be the communication facilitator, and so thus you will be talking to the owner when you talk with the architect. You must have that correct communication lines. Quickest way in the world to add frustration, add time, add cost, and basically turn a good quality project into a piece of junk overnight is getting someone who really is unable to or unwilling to communicate with the team. Han, you've seen that so many times. Go ahead.
Yeah, let me add something too. If you have a contractor, and I want to be fair, majority of the contract that we have encountered, I have encountered, and I'm sure Jim is the same to our careers, that they prefer to not have to answer to the architect. They like to have a free rein of the project. Okay, I don't blame them because who want to have their hands and legs or who want to be accountable to stick to the specification, to budget and cost and quality. If you have the free rein, then, I mean, the owner are not construction people or design people. Carpet's carpet, a door's a door. They wouldn't know. and most of them don't know. So, you know, substitution could be easily done, and there's nobody to have, they have to answer to. So we see that a lot. But if you encounter a contractor who say, I'd rather work with the owner and not with the architect, I think first thing is I'm seeing smoke. Second thing is I see the red flag. And third thing is I want to know why. What is it that put them in a position or in a mindset where they don't want to work with the architect? I mean, besides the architect, you also have engineers. Okay, all your technical people, if you remove them, what would happen to the project? I can tell you a few horror stories. Okay, is that you as the owner, if you hire the professional who design and engineer the building, and then doing the contractor usually built what was designed. They don't design. Okay, everything's on paper that they're supposed to follow. If you don't have anybody there to make sure that they put in the equipment that was specified or the material that have been called for the project and met the way it's supposed to be installed and the quality and all that stuff, you get whatever they give you. There isn't anybody that will hold their feet to the fire. So I would ask why. Okay, that's a big question. Is it because, you know, you don't like them? Is it because you want to have free reign? Whatever it is, that's a big flag. We did run into that a couple of times, and the client agreed to it against our protest, and it turned out not so pretty. So, yeah,
yep.
Ask why.
Yeah. Yeah, it does happen, and unfortunately, and Hans right, there are a lot of contractors who see the architect as a necessary evil because they've got to stamp the drawings because that's the way law is, but in reality, they like to take over the show and run with the project once they've been given the go ahead by the owner, signed on the dotted line, and the faster they can get the project done, the quicker they are finalized, the faster they get paid, means the more money they make. That's one way that a contractor may look at finding, let's say a low contractor bid will give you pause to really think, is okay, are they going to come back later with a whole bunch of change orders? Change orders are those nasty little things that the contractor says, well, that wasn't in the project, or that wasn't in my quote, or that wasn't in the drawings, or this is a condition that was out in the field that nobody knew about, and it's going to cost you X to remedy that situation. We can't move any further till you write a check for it. How'd you like to be in that position? Having the right contractor on the job as part of the team, especially from day one, you can minimize those nasty little things called change orders. Sure, they might occur. Hopefully they're small. And that's what we always recommend a contingency for in your project budget. We're going to talk about that when we talk more to Mike Montgomery, having to do with the lending side. Just as a reminder, that's going to be on October 30th. He's going to be our guest host. He's from Live Oak Bank. He's a senior loan officer, and they've done thousands of dental project and medical projects, so they have a ton of experience. But what I was getting at was, you know, want to minimize those change orders because those can be very costly and they hurt because you're either writing a check or it's coming out of your contingency. If you don't have a contingency, then it is just write a check and keep moving. Because your option is, just like they said, once they've got you on the hook, they're going to either say, agree to this, or, you know, go find somebody else to do it. And then back to the original we talked about, very costly to find somebody else, very costly to terminate, time lost times three. So,
Jim, the opposite could happen too, okay? If you have a very detailed set of drawing for them to work from. So there, there's virtually there is no change order. Okay, but if the architect is removed from the project, substitution would be a good opportunity to increase the profit on the project. For instance, this has happened a couple of times and luckily was caught. But it's shop drawing for your cabinet package. I say your cabinet package is $50,000, and it's called out for medium density fiberboard or plywood, and so the sub may bid on that and so on. But when they fabricate it, instead of using what was specified, plywood or MDF, they could use particle board, which is cheaper, lower quality. You would know because when it's brought out to the site, it's already been covered over with plastic laminate. So the only way that you would know is to cut it, cut it in half and take a look at the core. Okay, so they could save themselves thousands of dollars in just material. Now, we had a project where a shop drawing was submitted to us for approval, and we looked at it and said, well, we specify medium density fiberboard MDF and plywood, but what they are going to provide is particle board. Before the shop drawing was completed, the cabinet people was given approval by the contractor, and it was brought out to the site and installed. So if once it's installed, you go like, do you take it out and have them build new one, and go through a delay process because of that, or do you accept it? So they force your hand. But when that happened, you do have the authority and the legal means to at least get credit for what was not installed compared to what was installed. So substitution is another area that where money can be taken out of a project, unfortunately taken out of the project but not given to you, but it goes through the hand and pocket of the contractor.
Absolutely. And the point that I was getting at was having to do with, again, we're talking about a lot of the things that you need to look out for because some of the horror stories are out there. When you get the right contractor on the job who is firing on all cylinders and understands the relationship and understands the communication needs and understands what's going on, you would not believe how beautifully smooth a construction project can go and how beautifully smooth it finalizes and ends up being just this wonderful experience. We've had them happen. There are yep. good quality people out there, and it's not just a construction general contractor. There's project managers. Now, I have personally seen in my 30 plus years of doing this that a construction management role or delivery method tends to get a much higher level of communication than a general contractor, because a construction manager is on the job. He's in the project from almost day one. That person is part of the design team. They're there at the table when decisions are being made, when the first thoughts are being put down on paper as to how big this thing is going to be or what it's going to look like or what it's going to be made of. They're there. So they're actually invested emotionally. They're invested, obviously, financially, because they're in the business to make money and make a profit. And profit's not a bad word, a fair one. And they're really invested in the success of this project because they're a little different animal because they don't actually build anything. They just manage the build of a whole bunch of trade contractors. So they really need that referral from you to help them get the next project and the next project and the next project. Just like in the dental practice, you use referrals to get your next patient. Once you get a patient in the door, excellent service keeps them in the door, and excellent service gets them to tell their family, their friends, their coworkers that you need to go see such and such because he's the best dentist or she's the best dentist in the area, and I got this exceptional service. Well, what's that do to your business? It increases your business. So finding the right kind of the construction entity, that's just another reason why we like to recommend a project manager, because they're there from day one. Less issues of, well, that was never known. What do you mean it wasn't known? You were there the day the decision was made to do it. You can't, you know, you minimize those change orders because they can't have that excuse if they wanted to say, well, I didn't know that. Well, wait a minute. You're the one that says this is the way we wanted to do it because it was the most cost-effective way. So you really get a better solution and a better project, at least we feel, when you utilize the role of a project manager or a construction manager. One of the other important things, go ahead, Hon.
In terms of background, what have been your experience and observation that the construction manager, what's their typical, professional background? They come from finance, they come from construction, engineering or architects. So, what is their technical and or professional background?
Well, actually, construction managers, the good ones, either they've either grown up and eat, sleep, and drink construction and have the unique abilities to really be able to communicate and manage things, or they have gone through a very rigorous training program that specifically trains them in the role of a construction manager. We'll put on our website a link to an article put out by the Project Management Institute. It's it's called a conference paper. Actually, it was done back in 2009, but it says, what are the core competencies of a successful project manager? And it is a very thorough little, maybe about 10-page document. And in it, it has a checklist of the basically how to pick a project manager in the core competency areas, like management skills, leadership, be able to provide direction, sound judgment, issues and how to resolve conflict, then also experience and all those kind of things. So there is also licensure involved. There's really about, I think there's four levels of construction managers and certified project managers. It talks about those, some of which require them to have in excess of almost 5,000 hours of experience in 3 years dealing with specific project types before they can actually sit and take an exam. There's an actual construction management exam that's out there for them to receive a special certification as a construction manager. So it is a very technical, but at the same time, thorough program that a construction manager might go through to say, hey, I'm coming out of high school and I want to go into the construction management world because my dad runs a construction company and this is where I see what I want to do. I know several very good construction managers and worked with a few really, really good ones that have gone through that particular program. And these guys are the best of the best, and they are very highly sought out in the construction world. One works for an architectural firm over in Indiana. Another works for a construction company over in northeastern Ohio. I mean, they're just, you know, they're the good, very, very good ones are few and far between, but when you get the good ones, you know what you've got. But there are a lot of very competent construction managers, so they don't really come from a particular area, like, you know, they don't come from a finance world or whatever. The big thing is they have to be able to have those core competencies. And I'll put that in, I'll put a link in our website where you can download that from the Project Management Institute and really get a more in-depth discussion of what a project manager is and does and that kind of stuff. But one of the things I did want to talk about, go ahead, Han.
Yeah, what I find, at least my two cents, is that dealing with the construction general contractor versus construction managers, that the construction manager seems to be more involved. They know the project. They just didn't bid the project. They know the project. They can get in there and talk money. They can talk code. I mean, they're most of them are very, very well trained and very detailed. And on the opposite, of course, there's general contractors. Some are comparable to construction manager, but most of them, they're the sales guy. They, you know, they chase the job, and they're not as familiar with the project, and so they hand it down to other people and stuff like that. So, for on a day-to-day, one-on-one basis, it seems like the construction manager is the guy that knows the pulse of the project financially, schedule, and technical. And it just seems, just seems a big plus to a project versus a contractor.
Well, that's true. And you bring an important point out, and that is who's going to be on the job on a day-to-day basis. You may have the suits and the shoes come in and interview, and they're the folks that, you know, win the project because of what they said or what they did. But in reality, they're not the folks that are going to be out there on the project on a day-to-day basis. They're going to have superintendents, project managers, whomever, that are going to be out on the job on a day-to-day basis dealing with the issues. When you interview, and you must really interview in the selection process, but when you interview, you must ask for that superintendent or project manager or on-site person to be part of that interview. They have to pick it. If they won't pick that person and they won't bring that person to the table from day one, run away. You don't want them, because really what they're trying to do is just get the project. Then they're going to put maybe a junior superintendent or who, you know, you don't know who's going to be on the job on a day-to-day basis, or they may have rotating superintendents because they've got so many projects going on, and the superintendent is doing two or three or four projects at a time. And there's just all kinds of fun things, but you need to be comfortable with, you need to be able to communicate with, and you need to know who that person is going to be on that job. Because a lot of these construction projects, if you're doing a new build, could be 6 months. Who are you going to be dealing with for 6 whole months while this thing is being built, and you're spending money like it's going out of style? Every month there's a pay request for hundreds of thousands of dollars. The bank is saying, okay, you've expired 3/4 of your project budget, and hopefully you're well over 3/4 of the way done. You know, it's a stressful time because the money is going out the door at a quick rate, and the safeguards and the checks and balances need to be in place. And so you really do need to make sure that you're comfortable with that person who's on the job on a day-to-day basis, because he or she is going to be the one that everyone's going to look to solve any and all problems. And this is the construction world. Problems happen. Things happen. Everything is not perfect. we shoot for perfection. You want to try to get it as perfect as possible, but it's never perfect. The best construction project is the one that has the solutions that are done the quickest. It's materials and methods that really have to do with that's what a contractor is responsible for and how to best to put a project together. And if they can do that and do it very quickly and meticulously, but at the same time correctly, then that's how they make money, because they get the project done in the most expedient way. Now, you've got other things that you must have, and I can't reinforce more. We've seen it too many times, haven't we, Han? Everything needs to be in writing. So if a contractor is unwilling to write something down and he wants to only go by what was verbally agreed to or what was verbally said, run away. You know, it's like,
yeah,
no.
There's an old saying that the primary case, everything in writing, make sure it's in ink.
Yeah, it has to be in writing, because if the crap hits the fan and it turns into a lawsuit, the only thing that counts are those emails, are those written contracts, are those pay applications, are those things that were in writing. It's not what he said, and it's not what she said, and it's not what you said, because unless that's all verified by a written backup, it basically is, well, that's what you said. It's not what I heard. So then the last thing that I had in general for the two areas, both construction contractor and project manager, is license. You really, from a general contractor standpoint, make sure that the contractor is licensed in the state and may need to be licensed within your city where you're going to be building. Make sure that they have the ability to be licensed if they're not, or if they are in fact licensed. And you can also check that license to see if there were some claims or issues against it. Just like you would be able to check some other vendor from a Better Business standpoint, you can check the contractor's license to see if they've had issues. And you'd want to do that in your fact-finding mission before you even select. Same thing with the project manager. Go ahead.
Jim, I think in most municipalities nowadays, they require the contractor and their subs to be licensed in their, you know, in their locale, in their city or county or whatever. But that usually are something that you have to submit to the municipality as a proof that these folks are indeed licensed to work in their, you know, in their jurisdiction.
Right. Well, and the other part of the licensure is insured. You want to make sure that they're licensed and also have the ability to be insured and bonded properly, so that in fact something does go upside down and haywire, that you have some recourses to deal with, because you've got to get rid of the first contractor and you got to put another one in. And then you get into the legal battle of, okay, you know, you file a claim against their insurance because of their failures, da, 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 da. So, but you've got to make sure that they're both licensed and insured so that you have some kind of recourse if something were to go haywire. And don't get us wrong, there are a lot of really, really, really good construction contractors out there. It's the fact of how do you find that person? That's what you need to do. And the only way to really find that person is to be able to ask all of these questions and see what they've done in the past. It's their ability to tell you things at an interview is important, but, and, you know, the feeling of, okay, this person is, you know, giving me the straight scoop, or they're trying to feed me a line. But the questions are, what have you done in the past? We'll give you a very good indication of what they'll do in the future. And how did that work out for that particular project? Talk to that owner. How did it work out for this particular doctor? Talk to them. And they'll give you the straight scoop. You know, you don't have to dig it out of them. If you have to dig it out of them, then you better raise the red flag that, oh, crap, there may have been some issues, and they're unwilling to talk about those issues because they think they're going to get sued. So there's a lot of things out there. Han, is there anything you wanted to talk about that we've missed in relationship to at least the process of trying to get the right construction member on the team?
I think you cover everything there, Jim. In short, there's one other item, is that where before you make your final decision, if you can, you visit a project that they had worked on, so that you can see the quality.
Good.
You know.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, I think it. Let's say because I see this happen more than I like to see. A contractor is doing a project for my friend. My friend is happy, you know, it's a good price, on schedule and good quality and all that stuff. Your friend, the level of expectation may not be the same level of expectation as yours. So, you know, go and kick the tire. Look it for yourself. Picture often can be deceiving. A picture doesn't tell you the level of quality that you need to see. So I recommend that once you got all of these questions and everything, you know, at the comfortable level, go and check out their project if you can. That will tell you more than likely what your project will be like. You know, some contractor have the freedom to call all the shots. You know, if they're good, decent folks, they will give you the quality product that you pay for. And some just good enough is good enough. If that is your level of that meets your level of expectation, then it's good enough. But if you want more and you want to make sure that you get, you know, that the contractor will do what they say they do, and give you the, you know, and they do a good job and things that fit right, you know, the paint on the wall covers everything and, you know, the doors are tight and, you know, all the things that you would expect for a quality job, you need to go and check it out.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, that's a very good point. And my last point is that even if you were to pick a general contractor or construction manager, obviously listen to the team. The team that will, the core team, go back to your core team, talk about the all aspects. And like Han said, if you were to go visit a project, if it's able to, take your designer with you and let them look at and say, okay, you talked about having this kind of a system here or that kind of flooring here. You know, it really is a test drive, and it's a golden opportunity to test drive what maybe your facility might want to look like. And, you know, go 2 to 3, 4 of them if you're able to be able to get a better idea or clue. Okay, with that, I'd like to talk about next week's episode, which is going to be preparing your practice for growth. We're going to have Dr. Hunsinger as a guest host with us on that one, and he's going to give all the particulars on how best to be able to set things up so that you're ready come day one when you start that new project and open those doors that you're ready to be able to move in and you're firing on every cylinder that you possibly can, making all the right decisions and have all the wheels greased properly. And that will be on next Tuesday. And with that, obviously, if you want to learn more about us, you can call us or connect with us through our website. But Han, what's been happening on Dentaltown?
An interesting topic, and I think it's often, leave out a lot of discussion, Jim. I see drawings of buildings and layout for building projects presented for input and critique and so on. Site development is something that often overlooked. You know, as strange as it sounds, buildings get designed without giving any consideration for how the site works. I think we touched base on this a couple of times in our previous discussion. But you know, based on your experience and opinion, who do you feel would be the best candidate to design, basically do a design a site?
Personally, I like to design the site. And the reason why I say I like to design the site is the initial site is so tied with the building itself, along with the building function, along with just how everything works. It just feels natural that we take the first shot, meaning we as the architect and the designer, take the first shot at actually designing how the site is laid out, how the building is placed on that site, the orientation of things. Once we've created what we like to call the architectural site plan, which talks about, okay, here's the orientation of the building, here's where we want it to face, here are the amenities that we want to be able to take advantage of, here's where the parking would be, here's where the entrance to the building would be, here are where things like exterior signage would be, if they're ground-mounted, that kind of stuff, because we're taking into effect everything from visibility, we're taking into effect in discussing things like being able to market the building in the sense that by people going by and seeing the building, you know, your building is more of a sign than your sign is. It's really the building that they see first, then they see the signage, and then they see the address. Unless, of course, you have an address number that's bigger than the building. I've seen a couple of those buildings before, but not the most
building
attractive.
Building number one.
Yeah, exactly, building number one. But so we like to take the architectural site plan, we do the lead, we create it, then we pass it off to the other team member, which would be the civil engineer. The civil engineer then goes to the technical aspect of making sure that all things are correctly oriented, that the parking lot is the right size, there's exactly enough parking spaces based upon the codes. We're going to look at parking spaces based upon reality. A lot of times you need more parking than you think you need. You need more parking because code maybe says you only need 15 parking spaces, but in reality you need 30. And that reality is based upon how you use the building and who's in the building. All those things then get created and it becomes a team effort after that point. But from the initial design, I like to take it first, only because we know best about how that building is going to function in relationship to the site, then let the rest of the team members work it from there.
Yeah, I think what brought me to this discussion is that I saw a building, I was looking at a building, it's a two-story building, just a very plain Jane, almost a square, with elevators and stair and all that stuff. And whoever designed it doesn't seem to have the foresight or the understanding of how the occupant use it, the code that's involved. And then lastly, the site. The project, it's a kind of a wedge shape site. And the building, it sits at an intersection, and the building gets set right at the intersection closest to the road, which I think, you know, for exposure, that's a great thing. But when you are in the beautiful Ohio, Michigan, Indiana weather around this time of the year, when the snow come down and things like that, and you have the farthest parking space is 100 yards away, you're going to be in trouble. That person is going to freeze halfway, through the parking lot before they can get to the building. It seems that even though it's at the intersection, the front door or the front of the building faces the parking lot or faces away from the road. Access to the building is not even considered. So it's almost like designing a building and see how it fit onto the site rather than looking at the site, looking at the building, and try to make them sing together and make them dance together. Often I just look at it, scratch my head, and go like, why don't they look at the site? And who's at the table talking about how the site is to be designed? Is it the, do they have the contractor, or the engineer? Who? There's so many things left out. And, how do you service, how the service that comes to the building or the service comes to the site? Do you want the garbage guy to drive from the front of the site all the way to the back, and then he had to back out? No storage and all that stuff. None of that seems to be taken into consideration once you put the building and the site together. It's an area, and I think it's an area that are often an oversight or overlooked or ignored totally until after they have the building all designed. And then they say, now how do we fit this on?
Exactly. And a good design and a good design team will design the building with the site in mind from day one. So actually your site will help to actually create your final design of your building more than anything else. That's why it's crucial. One of the things that we like to always say is, before you go buying a piece of property, get an idea of what it might look like with the building on that property. Because if you decide that, I've got three properties here, which one do I pick? Well, we can't make that decision until we do some real quick analysis and give you some recommendation, because there are so many aspects that need to be looked at, and we can make some quick analysis and be able to say, okay, this site A has this advantages and allows you to do this, this, and this, and site B has this, and site C has that. Then you're an informed. You're an informed buyer. You have, okay, that's perfect. I want to be able to do this, this, and this, so it's C. That's the best site for me. How not better to be able to make an informed purchase as opposed to, well, I've already bought the property, let's throw the dice and let's hopefully we get the right kind of design that fits what I want to put on there. So, well, excellent. That actually was a really interesting discussion. I can only imagine what some of the folks out there said or were asking about. But with that, we obviously, we've hit our time slot. We want to take any more of your time. Hopefully it's been educational. You've learned something. You've got some questions. Feel free to call us, send us an email, get us on our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Call us on our toll-free number of 866-213-1268. And with that, I'm going to say good night. Hope everything goes well. And obviously thinking about those folks that are dealing with the aftermath of the hurricane and stuff down south, and hope everything's well there. Han?
Yeah, and for me, down in St. Petersburg, we must be living right, because Michael's just bypassed us, knock on wood. Thank you for tuning in with us. Until next time, have a good evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.